Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. On Monday and Tuesday of next week, WILL-TV and public television stations across the country will present a powerful new documentary entitled Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. It's based on the best-selling book of the same name, written by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. The two traveled the globe to examine threats women and girls face every day in the 21st century, from trafficking to prostitution to rape and mutilation to a variety of forms of discrimination. Along the way, they also met a number of individuals fighting to change the social, cultural, or economic forces that perpetuate such treatment. In the film, Kristof and Wu Dunn are accompanied by a number of actress activists, including Diane Lane, Eva Mendes, Meg Ryan, and Olivia Wilde. But they are most definitely not the stars of this production, but rather the lens through which we viewers learn about some of the indignities women face in other lands. And perhaps the real stars are those seeking to do something about these indignities. We have one such woman joining us this morning. Edna Adan is the former foreign minister of Somaliland, an autonomous region in northwest Somalia. She was previously Somaliland's Minister of Family Welfare and Social Development and worked at the World Health Organization. She's also president of the Organization for Victims of Torture, but the role she plays as presented in Half the Sky and what she has devoted much of her life to has to do with her trade. She's a trained nurse, midwife, and a hospital manager and started the Edna Adan Maternity Hospital of Somaliland, which not only delivers babies but also and specifically treats women, girls, and infants suffering health effects of or compounded by harmful traditional practices like female genital mutilation. Edna Adan, welcome to Focus. Edna, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, glad to have you with us. Also with us today is the executive producer and director of Half the Sky, Mauro Chermayev. Mauro, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you both with us. And we also welcome you to the conversation this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again is 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Before we delve too deeply into this material, I think I should warn our listeners that we are talking about some fairly intense topics today, and some of it you might determine to be unsuitable for younger ears. Mauro, how did you come to this project, and why make a film based off of Kristof and Wu Dunn's book?
Well, I came to the project actually through public media. I've been working for many, many years, thankfully, at PBS, doing a number of series. So when Nick and Cheryl first brought this project to CPB, they knew they wanted to get involved, and they knew that the project would be very large. So thankfully for me, they forged the introduction, along with my fellow executive producers, Mikaela Beardsley and Jamie Gordon, who had been working with Nick previously on a film that they made about some of his work in the Congo. So it sort of came together just before the book had come out, actually. The book came out in 2009. And, you know, we started then to think about what a big project and what an exciting project it could be.
What did you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, we knew that in the book that what Nick and Cheryl really focused on was storytelling. They really wanted to tell and talk about these important issues, but through the lens of individuals, not only individuals facing these challenges, young women, young girls, but also the incredible, as we call them, agents of change, such as Edna, these incredible women who in their own countries are forging putting forth amazing projects and doing incredible work that are changing the lives of so many in their communities. So we're really about storytelling, and we're really about introducing people to amazing women around the world who are doing incredible work in the face of serious difficulties.
Edna, the film lays out how particularly in uneducated and impoverished countries, certain practices that maybe we in the West would characterize as horrifying are part of everyday life, in some cases a part of tradition going back many generations. Is that a fair assessment of the case with female genital cutting in Somaliland?
Yes, I would call it a fair assessment. It's the practices that have been observed for centuries and generations, and girls have had their mothers have had it. Their grandmothers, everybody, their neighbors, their sisters, their cousins, everybody has it. And it becomes the social norm. It's like for us, male circumcision is something that every boy has to go through. And girls also assume that this is the same requirement for a girl as well. Not questioning why it is done, no more than anybody would question why are you circumcising your little boy. But not knowing that it is not a religious obligation when male circumcision is required by our religion, Islam, female circumcision is not. It is, in fact, Islam disapproves of cutting human flesh if it is not diseased. So it is a harmful traditional practice that has existed, and everybody has just gone through it. I myself included, and thought that this was something that everybody has, so no need to question it. It is only after I realized and understood that this was not so that the horror of it came upon me, not as a victim, but as a midwife. I was going to work every day, trying to get a baby out from a part of the body that had been so badly damaged, when that girl or that mother need not have gone through it. For boys, it's a very small, what is cut off is something that does not damage or mutilate the male organ itself, whereas in female circumcision, it does. So it's something that is perpetrated, continues to be practiced out of ignorance. And it is in 1976 that I began to speak out against it. And it so happened that I attended a conference in a Muslim country, and I saw for the first time male and men and women, religious leaders, medical practitioners, discuss it and preach against it. And I thought, oh my God, this is not only is it physically damaging, is it not only medically damaging to the woman, it is also something that goes against the teachings of Islam. And that's when I first spoke out against it.
Go ahead.
Yes. No, and I limit myself. I'm a health practitioner. I limit myself to discussing that problem and in regard to its consequences on the health of the woman. I speak about the infections. I speak about the pain. I speak about the medical complications which I face every day in my profession.
Before we go any further, I would like to play a clip from the film which features you, Edna, and it starts with Nicholas Kristof talking about female genital mutilation and explaining the reasons behind the high maternal and infant mortality in Somaliland. Then that will be followed by you, Edna, as well as Jane Peters, a British midwife. So let's listen to that clip, and then I want to ask you about it. So here's a clip from the film Half the Sky.
Welcome to our hospital.
Thank you so much.
The reasons for maternal mortality in Somaliland are manifold. You have women who are malnourished, women who are anemic, they don't get enough iron, and female genital cutting.
We have the medical side, where we've also put the fistula women.
Okay.
And we've also got the maternity side.
Female genital cutting is one of the major human rights abuses around the world today. In Africa alone, there are 3 million girls a year who are cut. It's more likely to lead to obstructed labor, and the result is that more women die in childbirth.
In a lifetime, a Somali woman will have an average of 8, 9, 10 babies. The more babies she has, the closer they are together, the more the mother will risk having complications.
I'm a midwife, trained in the UK. For about 15, 16 years now, I've been a midwife. I've just come into my fifth week, and I have seen more women die here and more babies die in those just over four weeks than I've seen in the last 15 years. Remember, this is a country where the women have no say on their own bodies. We can't even do a cesarean section on a lady here without her husband gives us permission to do it, even in an emergency. Women are...
It's all right, my darling.
I don't want to say second-class citizens, but women are expendable. I have not encountered female genital mutilation till I came here. I know that all the girls that I've met and all the women that I've delivered or looked after here have all had FGM.
FGM, female genital mutilation or female genital cutting or female circumcision, call it whatever you like, it's a traditional mutilation. It's causing scar formation. And scar tissue is less elastic. It will not widen enough to let the baby out. Instead, it rips, it tears, and it damages organs that are around it.
Just a smaller piece of me. I don't want to see it that big one.
Because it's been sewn that tight, we have to literally cut them open to get the baby out.
A scene from Half the Sky featuring one of our guests, Edna Don. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are talking with the director of and one of the subjects of this film debuting Monday night at 8 on public television. It's called Half the Sky, and it's based on the best-selling book of the same name written by journalists Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. We heard Nick Kristof at the beginning of that clip. Both of them in the book and in the film examine threats that women and girls face every day in the 21st century, from trafficking to prostitution to rape to mutilation to a variety of forms of discrimination. And along the way, they also meet a number of individuals fighting to change this dynamic. And among those individuals is one of our guests, Edna Don, who opened and operates a maternity hospital in Somaliland. You just heard her in that clip as well. In Somaliland, girls face harmful traditional practices like female genital mutilation, which lead to health problems, including difficulty in childbirth, which in turn leads to a high infant mortality rate. Also with us is Half the Sky's executive producer and director, Mara Chermayev. We welcome you to the conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can post comments on WILL's Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, there are a lot of powerful moments in this film, of course. Edna, there were a couple of things that stuck with me that Jane Peters had to say in that clip. One phrase that's just, you know, heartbreaking is that her perception, based off of just what she's observed, and at this point in the film, it's after just a few weeks, the phrase, women are expendable in Somaliland.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But what I would like to clarify, of course, is
sure.
My hospital is a referral hospital. It's a hospital where women are sent from all corners of the Horn of Africa. So we do see a very high number of complicated pregnancies. That's why we have a high number of patients who have morbidities that could lead to death. Very often women are brought from distances that require 3 or 4 days of road travel, transportation on a milk truck, on a bus, and only to be brought to my door, and they die at my doorstep. But once they are within the compounds of the hospital, they fall into our statistics, which is a very, very sad and tragic situation. We also have the tradition that women require that a male relative, a brother, a husband, a father, a grandfather, give permission for the woman to receive, to be operated upon. If we do that without the permission of a male relative, then we could be in trouble. And someone said, "Well, you operated on a woman when you had absolutely no no permission from us to do so. So it is up to us to convince the relatives that we are operating not because we just wish to operate, but there is a need for this operation. There is a need to save this woman's life. There is a need to save the baby's life that she is carrying. There is a need to put her, to give her anesthesia in order to operate. And just as much as you would have a consent form signed in any of your hospitals, the only thing is that our women are illiterate. They cannot read. They cannot understand what is in that consent form. They cannot reach a decision whether they should or should not have that operation. I'm Somali. I'm Muslim. I've had several operations myself. But because I could read, because I could understand what the operation required, I gave my own consent. But there was no need for me to say, I will have to ask my father whether I should have my appendix out. I will have to need my, require my husband to give permission for me to have this or that operation. There is a need for an operation. It's an emergency. I understand it. I believe that the operation will save my life, and I give consent that the that I should be given anesthesia and undergo an operation. So I would not generalize it too much, but then the level of ignorance, the level of illiteracy is so high that the patients we do get are those who are illiterate, who cannot read, who cannot understand, who cannot understand what a foreign person is saying to them. They need to be, this needs to be explained to them. They probably come from an environment where there has never been a hospital. Women have gone through pregnancies, have either delivered or have died. And when they delivered, it was good. When they died, it was God's will. It is assumed that this was a decision that was made upstairs, that the woman should die. It's a very fatalistic attitude. So having a hospital where there has never been a hospital before does present its problems. Knowing that every hospital has its problems, it adds to the problems of my hospital. And we have to be sensitive about it. We have to be seen as people who are saving lives, who are not going against the tradition. I would certainly not do anything that goes against the culture of my people, and the tradition of my country, because of the respect that I have for my people. I would hate to alienate or to give an image that that angers or frightens or distances women from the institution where health could be made available for them. So there is a need to respect and to understand the sensitivities and traditional norms of the people that are being served.
It sounds as if you have to walk quite a tightrope, that you have to be
sensitive
to all of that, but at the same time reinforce what is medically important, what may be misunderstood.
And to try to educate. I mean, Edna spends so much of her effort very successfully trying to educate people about their options when they enter the hospital and certainly before, going out into communities and trying to let people know what the circumstances are, how they could avoid some of these conditions and situations. I mean, it's a life's work.
Mauro, go ahead, Edna.
No, sorry. Yeah, it is indeed a life's work. I mean, this work, the work that I'm doing was, I started doing this in 1961. This is 51 years of work of a lifetime.
You'd never know it if you saw her.
I trained in England. I trained in universities in Europe and in the United States, where circumstances and situations were different, where the clients being served had a different background, where communication with the client was absolutely something that was not as difficult as that with the patients that I was serving in my own country. So it has always been very important for me to make the people understand, to bridge, bridges of confidence. They need to respect you, they need to trust you, and then that's when they come to you. Because if they do not trust you and they do not respect you, they don't come to you and they die away from an institution where help could have been provided. So there, it is like walking on eggs, as you said. There's a great sensitivity, and there's got to be that constant building upon the reputation of the institution, the health reputation of the healthcare provider, learning from what has the successes that have been achieved in the past, from the people who have been trained in the past, who are doing a great work in the community today, pointing to the transformation of the girls after they have trained as midwives, and the confidence they have gained and the skills they have acquired and the contribution they are making to the community. These are the things we need to focus on.
And I should...
We do not have women dying upon us because they're afraid to come to us.
I should point out that one of the goals that is laid out in the film, one of the goals that you have, Edna, is to have a trained midwife in every health facility, every community throughout Somaliland. And that in so doing, then that in and of itself may be a significant step forward. Would you agree?
Oh, it is.
It's
the only way I would know how to fight this problem. In every country, you have the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and health authorities everywhere in their country have a health plan and have a human resources plan. You know how many hospitals you have. You know the population distribution in your country. You know the number of nurses or midwives or doctors or pediatricians you need to work in any particular health providing institution in your country. We are in a situation where we have none of these. And if we're lucky, there is one midwife within a range of several hundred kilometers. If we're lucky, we have one or two doctors. In 1961, there was only one doctor in the entire former British Somaliland Protectorate, and I happened to be the first and only qualified midwife in the entire country of Somaliland. So we're dealing with situations where we are certainly outnumbered by the need of the population, when we are understaffed, and the only way to overcome some of these problems is to have more people trained. Young women from the community trained for 2 years, taught the basics of anatomy and physiology, taught the basics of normal obstetrics, taught the basics of recognizing problems associated with a pregnancy, and having these women understand when a woman needs to be referred, not 4 days or 5 days after she gave birth to a baby and the placenta is still retained,
but
referring her in good time so she can be saved.
Mauro, it occurs to me that Edna is almost like a microcosm of what Half the Sky is all about. In watching the film, it seems like the focus of the film is not strictly on showcasing the abuses that happen around the world, and there are significant abuses in lots of different countries and some really intense stuff, but not just informing the West of that, but also identifying here are the individuals that are seeking to make a specific and practical difference.
Well, Half the Sky, our television series, which airs 2 hours over two nights, and actually we look at six different primary issues. We look at gender-based violence, we look at sex trafficking, maternal mortality, generational prostitution in India. Some very tough things, but one of the primary elements of the book and also of the series is to talk about the opportunity, is to show you that where you see some of the toughest situations or, you know, the way that people can treat other people can seem quite shocking, what you also find in that same place is the greatest humanity and the most wonderful people and people that are working incredibly hard to change their own lives and their lives of the people in their own communities. And they're doing so very successfully, and that they're incredible people within those countries who are doing amazing work and helping to lift these girls and change their path. And in that sense, we really focus on education and
the financial empowerment of women and girls as a primary way to look at how everything can change. That can be such a ripple effect. And also not to exclude men and boys, but to include men and boys in this process of understanding what an asset a girl and a woman can be to your community and to their own lives. And then as that effect continues, you know, we've been talking so much about, you know, the value of a woman and a girl, but if we don't engage in the value and the potential, the untapped potential of 50% of our population, we're going to be on a spiral in terms of global poverty that we cannot imagine. I mean, this women and girls are an incredible untapped resource, and educating them and giving them the chance to change, grow, hold money in their hands, own land, make their own choices about their life and their health and their child's education. These are critical things that will change the entire world. So, you know, Nick and Cheryl definitely, I definitely caught their bug when I read the book and when we started to travel around the world. I was shocked. Sometimes I was angered, but I was always inspired. Really inspired by what people can do and what they are doing.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing the new documentary film Half the Sky with its executive producer and director, Mauro Chermayev, and Edna Adan, one of the subjects of the film, who started the Edna Adan Maternity Hospital in Somaliland. We welcome you to the conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions via WILL's Facebook and Twitter pages. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. It's time for a short break. This is Focus.
Ready to roll? My name is Steve Martin. I'll be out here in just a moment, and we're going to start. We'll be starting in just a few moments, just waiting for the drugs to take effect, and then...
Steve Martin's early stand-up routines, his TV specials, and other TV appearances are now collected in a new DVD box set. We'll feature an interview with Steve Martin on the next Fresh Air.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and at 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Today's programs are made possible by the Courier Cafe, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Whether it's almond French toast for breakfast, garden fresh salads and homemade soups for lunch, or burgers and hand-dipped shakes for dinner, the Courier Cafe in downtown Urbana has been offering fresh choices for 30 years.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. On Monday and Tuesday of next week, WILL-TV and public television stations across the country will present a powerful new documentary entitled Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. It's based on the best-selling book of the same name written by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudunn. The two traveled the globe to examine threats women and girls face every day in the 21st century, from trafficking to prostitution to rape and mutilation to a variety of forms of discrimination. Along the way, they also met a number of individuals fighting to change the social, cultural, or economic forces that perpetuate such treatment. One of those individuals is joining us this hour. Edna Adan is the former foreign minister of Somaliland, an autonomous region in northwest Somalia. She was previously Somaliland's Minister of Family Welfare and Social Development. She's worked at the World Health Organization. She's also president of the Organization for Victims of Torture. The role she plays as presented in Half the Sky and what she's devoted much of her life to has to do with her trade as a trained nurse, a midwife, and a hospital manager. She started the Edna Adan Maternity Hospital of Somaliland, which treats women, girls, and infants suffering health effects of or compounded by harmful traditional practices like female genital mutilation. Also with us is the executive producer and director of Half the Sky, Mauro Chermayev. We welcome you to the conversation as well at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Mauro, while we have Edna with us today, of course, we are focused on what's happening in Somaliland, but what's happening there does seem to be a piece of this larger puzzle of how women are treated in all corners of the globe and face all sorts of discrimination and violence every day in some of the places that you profile in the documentary. I thought it might be appropriate if we played another clip from the film, then I'd like to hear reaction from both of you to it. This time we are in Sierra Leone, where sexual assault became a common human rights abuse during that country's civil war throughout the 90s. But awful as that was, as we learn in the film, it continues today, long after the war ended. This clip features Nicholas Kristof and Amie Kande, director of the Gender-Based Violence Program with the International Rescue Committee in Sierra Leone. Kristof and Kande are asking a police investigator in Freetown, the capital of Sierra Leone, about the number of reported sexual assaults in Freetown and how many of the reported sexual assaults are actually prosecuted.
So in the last year, about how many alleged rapes have you seen here?
Well, you know,
100, 1,000.
For Sierra Leone, the definition of rape is on women, not
okay.
on children,
right.
on a girl child. Hence, she's below 14.
I see.
Cannot charge for it. We just charge for abuse of younger.
I see. When was the last time you had a successful prosecution for either rape or abuse of a young girl from this FSU?
Well, we have the investigator. I'm not prosecuting.
Well,
Freetown,
only have one, and that was this this year.
Okay.
We haven't had any prosecution for a long time
okay.
in Freetown. They have got be committed to High Court,
okay.
but they have not gone beyond that.
We, as the International Rescue Committee and its partners, have actually responded to about 10,000 sexual assault survivors since we started operations in Sierra Leone. And out of that, there's not even 1%. Of those cases that have been convicted.
It still does seem as if something is wrong if thousands of girls are getting raped, and in all of Freetown, only one rapist is prosecuted.
It is a concern.
From what we are seeing, we just did a survey. Recently, we did a research from clients within the Rainbow Centers, what is preventing them from accessing, and the barriers they've cited, a lot of pressure from either police, I'm not saying it's you.
Okay.
Really, the laws are so cumbersome, and that's why we worked with BACA to develop the standard.
I think Amie is utterly heroic, and she's 1,000 times more effective because she is Sierra Leonean. Because part of the problem is cultural, there is potentially a certain drawback in a bunch of outsiders parachuting in and saying, hey, your culture is all wrong, you got to change it. It is much more effective if you get a woman or a man coming from within and calling for change.
And I want to bring in Edna Don now. What do you think of Nick Kristof's last comments there, that such change really needs to happen from within a nation, a community, a culture, that there's less value to someone dropping in from another nation or culture and taking a given community to task for a human rights violation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, injustices happen everywhere in the world. I cannot assume that the rape does not take place in your country or in a European or in elsewhere. Rape does not only happen in Africa. Injustices to women does not only happen in Africa. It happens everywhere. It's just that people are less educated. The law enforcement is less established in our countries than it is in yours. Very often, people will perform injustices or perpetrate injustice to another human being because they have no fear of recrimination or retribution. So it's very important that whatever action is taken to fight these injustices to women is headed by people who are sensitive to the culture of the people, to the sensitivities, and respect the culture and the sensitivity of these people, because we do have very good cultural practices that we would like to preserve. We have very good cultures that we're very proud of. So it's not putting all in one basket, but it's pointing to those that are harmful, that need to be discouraged, that needs to be abandoned, and explained to the people in a respectful way. And one of the strategies I use first I learned a lot from my late father, Dr. Adam, who taught me that unless you can do things with your heart, your hands will never learn to do it. I would see how he would sit on the ground with a couple of very poor people. So he's on their level. He's looking at them eye to eye. He is explaining something to them. He is referring to them as grandfather. He's referring to them as a senior person, not as a doctor who is ordering them to do things. And that, to me, was a very strong lesson that I learned, which I try to pass on. And one of the things I use is when I go to a community, I go and address the men, the leaders, the head of the village, the senior members of that village of 300 or 400 or 500. And I talk to them and, of course, tell them who I am, and, of course, that opens doors to me. They know me. They respect me. They show a lot of affection to me. And I say, well, we've talked about many things in the past. I remember the days when I would introduce to you the need to vaccinate children. And do you remember how you would run away from me? Do you remember how you would hide your children from me so that I would not vaccinate them? And now you hang out, come out to the health center in the morning, and you form a line so that to have your children vaccinated. Well, today I'm here to speak about another health issue that I need your support for, and I need your advice on how to go about it. So it becomes a shared advice, a shared strategy. I don't come and say, I am going to read a set of rules that you must implement, but I say, we need to change this. Tell me how we should go about it. Tell me how you feel about it. Tell me how you would advise me to go about it. I know how I should go about it, but I need to hear it from them. This is respect. And tomorrow, if anything goes wrong or things are not going as well as we hoped, we go back to the drawing board and we say, well, we managed to get this and that done, but we're still facing this and that other problem. So what else do you think we should be doing? How else do you think we should be approaching? That is the approach that works best for me. I've tried it. I've tested it for half a century. It works. the other thing is when somebody refuses to give permission to his wife to have an operation, I say, all right, well, she needs an operation. That operation would give her a chance of survival for her and for the baby that she is carrying. If you don't want her to be saved, okay, just sign the other side of the paper. Just tell me that you want her to die, and that's it. Then I know what you really want me to do. That's a strong argument. Nobody is going to sign on a paper, I want my wife to die. So I say, well, if you don't want her to die, then you want her to live. Well, if you want her to live, I need to go in there. I need to get this baby out. So which is it going to be? Are we going to agree that she should die here, right now, in front of you and me, or that we should go in and do what we have been taught to do to save her? We win that argument every time. What we lose is that woman who is brought to us too late, and her situation is irreversible. The baby inside her has been dead for 3 or 4 days. She has been bleeding for so long that she's got no blood left in her. Her uterus is probably ruptured. So these are the women we lose. And if we train midwives, if we train people who can assist these women in the villages, these problems are avoided. I know where we have placed trained midwives. I no longer have sleepless nights coming from these villages, because these girls take care of 50 or 60% of the simple complications associated with pregnancy. They see a woman is anemic, they give her iron and folic acid. They see a woman has an infection, they treat that infection. They see a woman who has a contracted pelvis and who will definitely need a cesarean section to give birth, they refer that woman in good time and inform me that they're sending a woman who has this and that condition, so we are ready to receive her. If we need to, we send an ambulance to pick her up. So there is a collaboration, and training is half the battle.
Meryl,
so it still goes back to education.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, throughout the film, we do hear the statement from a lot of folks that the ways that women are mistreated that are demonstrated in this film are or should be the human rights challenge of the 21st century.
Nick and Cheryl often refer to it as the moral challenge. You know, that this is the greatest moral challenge of our time.
Do you think enough of the world is engaged in thinking in such terms?
No, and I don't think it's because if they knew more about it or thought more about it when they were given this information, I find that it's just there's so many things going on in people's busy lives or in their own countries, and the things that are happening here and the things that are happening overseas seem far away, but really we're all in one planet, and these things are happening, and I think people don't know it. And one of the great I think values of this series is that in these 4 hours of television, we're taking you on a journey around the globe. We're in Sierra Leone, in Cambodia, Vietnam, Somaliland, India, Kenya. We're introducing you to so many incredible people. And what we find and what Nick and Cheryl say at the end of their book is, here's what you can do in the next 10 minutes. And people want to act. People, I think, in their hearts truly care about what would benefit other women and girls around the world. And I don't think they understand how pervasive the abuses are and how some of them can be solved easily. And some of them, of course, require huge amounts of financial support, but some of them don't. There's so many ways to get involved and help, whether you're using your own, the assets that you have. You can write a check for $10, but you can also volunteer and get involved and form and have book groups and the screening parties that are getting together to watch the series and talk about these important issues. So, and I think that it's also, as one always finds when they reach out and give to other people, the value comes back to yourself tenfold. So that's, we hope that what the series is going to do is introduce you to wonderful people and incredible stories, some of them very challenging and upsetting, but ultimately help you to build a pathway and a roadmap to make a difference in our world.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. There is still time for your questions or comments for Edna Don and Mara Chermayev about the film Half the Sky at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-WILL. We've talked about how education can play a role in raising even the most economically ravaged or war-torn areas of the world, and so doing can bring about changes in attitudes and traditions surrounding the treatment of women. I'd like to play one last clip from the film that perhaps demonstrates education's role in action. And in this clip, John Wood, the founder of Room to Read, begins by talking through an interpreter with the father of a girl sponsored by that group. He then talks about two students and the impact their education will have on the future.
So when there are parent meetings, he will stop working, pay the motorcycle taxi, the commuting fees and come back for the parent meetings. I'm sorry, can you just tell him how much I admire him? Mm-hmm. That he's making these difficult decisions, but that these children are so lucky to have him as a father.
So I was thinking, okay, if he takes one day off, he's losing probably 2.5 to 3 days of wages, and he's already living on the margin. So for me, it was just so emotional when he said, if I take one day off, I may be slightly more poor, but if my children do not get educated, they will always be poor. This is how a middle class forms. This is how a civil society forms. With Fung, we see a girl who's basically just told me now today that she wants to go on to university to receive a degree in accounting. With Yu Yen, she's completely convinced that she's going to finish secondary school. And that just makes me an optimist, because you're seeing in one generation everything changing. What I need to do is go back, and I need to tell the world, this is what a small amount of money can do. It is a moral failure that 200 million girls in the developing world woke up this morning and didn't go to school. By the time that I die, I would like us to start every sentence with words like, every girl goes to school, every child is literate, every child has access to reading materials, and no child should ever be told you were born in the wrong place at the wrong time and you didn't get educated. That whole idea just belongs in the dustbin of history.
That's John Wood. He's the founder of Room to Read and one of the folks profiled in Half the Sky, a documentary film, a four-part series or four-hour series airing 2 hours a night over two nights, Monday and Tuesday night on WILL-TV and on public television nationwide. You'll be able to watch the first installment Monday night at 8 on WILL. And we're talking with the executive producer and director, Mauro Chermayev, and also one of the other subjects of the film, Edna Adan, the former foreign minister of Somaliland who operates the Edna Adan Maternity Hospital of Somaliland. I wonder if, this is sort of a general question that I'd like both of you to address, but I'll ask Mauro to address it first. Is education, as we heard John Wood describe, sort of the silver bullet, or is it only a part of the solution to ultimately ending such abuse of women around the globe?
I don't think anything is ever a silver bullet. Nick likes to refer to it sometimes as silver buckshot. And he's right, because in truth, yes, education is the initial stepping stone. If you educate a girl, you are educating that family, that community, that village. And things can really have a ripple effect of change. You're like, you know, you're going to get, married when you're not, when you're, you know, a small child. I mean, we see children getting married at the ages of 10, 11, and 12 or being sent into arranged marriages. So many things happen if you educate a girl. And if you educate a girl, you're really creating an army and opportunity of change, because all of the things that we're talking about, as Edna talks about educating midwives, and then those midwives go out into those villages, and then these outcomes for other individuals change. Or when you educate, a woman who's, you know, takes all of her savings and all of her assets that she has and puts them towards the education of her children, this is how their future changes. It's not food on the table. It's the opportunity and what you can do with that and how that will change the world around you. So I do think that, that education is the key. It is the thing. And it's true in this country. It's true everywhere. Not being able to read, not being able to interface with your community, not being able to have all of the educational and social benefits that come with learning is cruel. And in every way, universally, talent is universal. Opportunity is not. And we should be doing everything in our power to make sure that the untapped potential of children all over the world, let alone, of course, the women and girls in the developing world, is a resource that we let flow and help and do everything in our power to move forward.
Edna, what do you think?
Yes, I fully agree with Mara. Education is not everything. It's like the cement that is used to glue together what is the construction material to build this skyscraper that I see from my window. Without cement, none of that would have happened. Without concrete, none of that could have been realized. So it's a foundation, and it's giving value to the woman who has received an education that is very important. It's very important for me to show that, for instance, when my late husband was a prime minister, I continued to teach, I continued to deliver, I continued to go to the maternity hospital and to be with my students. 2 days a week, I would do that. It was to give value to the profession. So it's the education that allows you to have a profession built upon it that is important. And then, of course, it's the performance of that person who has had an education and a training in carrying out the responsibilities that person has professionally in a way that is acceptable and welcomed by the community. They're role models. They're people who are looked upon or respected. For instance, I cannot end this without mentioning two young ladies who were among the first group of students I trained when I built this hospital and in Somaliland. And in the year 2000, the hospital was halfway built, and I thought, my God, who's going to work in this? you know, it's not the building, it's not the concrete that's going to look after patients. It's the skills of the and the competence of the people who should be working here. And I don't have nurses. I don't have midwives. So I started training nurses while the construction of the hospital was going on. And two of the girls who graduated from that first group stayed on to do midwifery and became midwives. And I'm not a good, I know nothing about investments and things like that. But I decided to invest in the education of those two girls, and I sent them to medical school and paid for their medical training for the next 6 years. They're not related to me. They became related to me through the classroom, through their performance in exams, through their attitude and their the way they look after patients. And they endeared themselves to me by the quality of the work they were doing. So I sent them to medical school, and they have just graduated from medical school.
Wow.
And one of them performs cesarean sections at 2 o'clock in the morning. An emergency happens. She's the one who's woken up. She's the one who does that. Now, that's the kind of education I'm looking for my people. That's the kind of training I would like them to have. And that's without the basic schooling, they cannot get to this level. Without concrete, you cannot get a skyscraper. That's all.
That's a great place for us to end it. Edna Adan is the former foreign minister of Somaliland and operates the Edna Adan Maternity Hospital of Somaliland. Edna, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And Mara Termayev is the executive producer and director of Half the Sky, which will air Monday and Tuesday night starting at 8 o'clock on WILL-TV and on public television stations nationwide. Mara, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On Monday's show, we'll continue our conversations with candidates for a couple of key offices in central Illinois. Previously, we spoke with Republican John Bambanek, who's seeking Illinois' 52nd state Senate district seat. On Monday, we'll talk with the incumbent Democrat, Mike Frericks. Today's show is produced by Travis Stanzel. Kyle Mabry's our technical director and handles your calls. I'm Craig Cohen.